your planes low, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas. It's a major weekend. Welcome inside another edition of Playing Through, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. I'm Bob Ballou.
I am Carl Mickelson. Bob, good morning. Happy PGA Championship Saturday, moving day at the PGA Championship. It's been a tough one to predict. I don't know if you made any predictions, if you made any choices, any picks to hit.
It's funny because you and I usually do. And
we do that. We talk so much about under blue skies, which we should get into at some point in this segment on how things went for your 2022 under blue skies golf classic. But that dominated so much of our conversation last week on the show. We didn't really do our usual, you know, pick it like we usually do. It's been a crazy week this week, but I can tell you who I did in the challenge for there at the Horn. I actually got it in my email inbox and filled some hits and misses. So I have to tell you that I felt good about Rory McIlroy, but I felt good about a lot of guys that didn't hit. I think there were a lot of layups, a lot of bunny picks that Scottie Scheffler, for example, Dustin Johnson for another, Kevin Kisner, guys that you thought would be slam dunks in this event, just the way the course plays, just the feel of this, just the firm and fastness, the ability to have creativity. What Gil Hanse has done on the course and left of Perry Maxwell's design has yielded an interesting championship venue, but it's a ridiculously unpredictable leaderboard. A lot of that has to do with the wind. Quite a bit of it has to do with the early draw, but I don't think it's the cast of characters we thought it would be, but there's still 36 holes left.
Yeah, and I think it's been super interesting to watch the wind shift and when guys got the, you know, it's always interesting when guys get to tee off, when they're, is it better to play Thursday morning and Friday afternoon or Thursday afternoon and Friday morning? What does the wind do? All that kind of stuff. But what's going to make this super interesting is that we had, 90 and 86 or 87, whatever it was in Tulsa. The high tomorrow or today, I should say, is going to be 62 and the high tomorrow is going to be 69. Like, it just totally changes the expectations of what may happen in this turn. It's like Thursday, Friday was one thing, and then today and Sunday is something totally different. And it's really interesting. I'm sure there are a lot of you out there that play different type events. So you may play I'm in one that's like you pick six players. The first two are usually pretty good, and then the second two are usually or the next four are just kind of the rest of the field. And then I never ever do anything like DraftKings or anything like that anymore, but I entered some DraftKings this week. And the funny part of those, so I have a DraftKings lineup that's like doing really well. And the only I have six players in it, and the only player to miss the cut, Scottie Scheffler. And I'm like, what? If you had told me before we started, there's only one guy that is going to make the cut out of your six players, I would have banked on it being Scottie Scheffler. We saw him get a little agitated right at the end of his first round on Thursday and show a little more emotion than I think what we've seen from him. He hit a shot a little short. I can't remember what hole it was. I think it was 16 or 17. He hit a shot a little short and kind of like flung his club in the air, put his hands on his head like he couldn't believe it, then got a little frustrated with a couple of his swings down the stretch, but he still finished one over and you kind of figured he'd be all right. And then yesterday just couldn't get it going. And it's golf. It's not like, but I just think it's always funny because, Scottie's just been playing the best golf in the world of anybody. If you were going to tell me there's going to be a guy that's going to make the cut, I think I would have just make the cut. I think in the field, I probably would have banked on it being Scottie Scheffler before just about anybody else.
I don't think there's any question. I mean, he's playing practice rounds out of his mind. His body looks good. His swing looks good and easy. But that's just how on the line I think this golf course is. I mean, I don't think this is anything indicative of how guys are going to play next week or the next event that they show up in or the next major that they show up in. This course is so on the edge that it's interesting. It's like an Augusta where there's more impending trees, more rough, but there's still some escapability in this golf course. It's a very unusual design. You'd much rather be in the middle of the fairway, but for guys who can crash shots, I mean, you're seeing a Bubba Watson solo fourth at 700 par, just playing the course, freewheeling on the golf course. And it's indicative of this quirky classic golf design that lets people shape shots. I think that's going to be the interesting part, is watching guys play the golf course their way. The contrast in styles of a Justin Thomas, who could literally be the model in the PGA swing manual, that they give, teaching pros the manual to learn how to coach. Justin Thomas is so classic in so many of the things he does. He's having success. Then you look at guys like Will Zalatoris, who is a little bit of a throwback at his young age, who can craft shots, who can hit it high, low, can shape it both ways. And then Bubba, who doesn't hit anything straight and is more comfortable in a venue like this where you have to shape it, where other guys might have trouble. He's more comfortable. And then you get to Rory McIlroy, who really literally reversed the curse and started hot in a golf tournament. That's all he's wanted for what feels like 5 years, and backed up a little bit yesterday. And so I think he remains one of the more intriguing storylines. I mean, Rory McIlroy is inside that bubble, and I don't know how big that bubble is. I mean, because like you say, temperature drops, the wind's still a factor. And we're not exactly sure yet how devious the PGA of America wants to be with pin placements, and how do they want this to be a moving day where a lot of roars happen, a lot of crazy stuff happens on the golf course, eagles and birdies are possibilities, or is it going to be a situation where Will Zalatoris can separate himself? All that remains to be seen.
Yeah, of course, and there's so much to get to with all the different guys. I love the Mito Pereira story.
For sure.
The 27-year-old Chilean who played a year at Texas Tech. And it always goes like this, right? I mean, there are always guys that kind of step up that unless you're just a diehard golf fan, which I know Mito Pereira is. I've kind of followed his story this year a little bit. He's been pretty good at times. Mm-hmm. But it's, in the PGA Championship, I was going back through the past winners, Carl. I was trying to, for so long, I think I just thought of this tournament as like a, I don't even know if I, not that I didn't consider it a major, but it just felt like there for a while. You know, we had Rich Beam win it in 2002. We had Sean McKeel win it in 2003. And
correct.
Y.E. Yang was the Tiger Killer in 2009. And Keegan Bradley and Jason Duffner and Jimmy Walker and all these guys who have one major, and it's right. This one, sometimes you just kind of look at that, but then you start kind of the way it's played the last few years and the winners, Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka and Colin Morikawa and Phil Mickelson and Jason Day and Rory McIlroy. And you see all these guys in the last 10 years who've won it. And you start to think like, this is, I feel like they've made some changes for the better. But it'll be interesting to see this weekend, because there are a lot of people who look at that leaderboard and they see Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy, and that's what they hope for Sunday afternoon. Whereas there are a lot of diehard golf fans who would say, I want to see Will Zalatoris. I want to see Abe Anser. I want to see Matthew Fitzpatrick run and try to get his first one. Stuart Sink's 47 and he's up there trying to, and Matt Kuchar too, trying to kind of bust through. So you see a lot of diversity in this leaderboard, and I think it's good. I think it's great for this game, for where it is, and for some of the young up and coming stars of this game, and Cameron Smith and Sam Burns that are trying to make their way into that conversation of you know, major winners or guys who are on the cusp of doing something special. So certainly there's a ton to get to, but I like the diversity of the leaderboard and what it means this weekend could bring.
Right. If you're a serious golf fan and you don't have one guy that you love or a couple of guys that you put money on, I think you root for a little bit of chaos, not necessarily for Will Zalatoris to waver, but for some of these guys to get out early and make a move. There's 16 guys inside the top 10, tied 10 or better, but that's seven strokes away from where Will Zalatoris is right now at 9 under par.
Right.
It feels like a long way. So guys are going to have to play aggressively. One, they're going to have to get some good breaks. They're going to have to get some good breaks with weather, but they're going to have to go for it to even get into the mix. I mean, you think about, you always think, the top 15, top 20 after 36 holes might have a chance unless somebody's just blown it completely in the water. And I don't think that's -9 Will Zalatoris. That's quite the case, but it feels like it's not a bunch leaderboard by any means. We could sit at the end of the day and only be talking about four or five guys with a realistic chance. I mean, I'd like to think that it's more, but that's a real possibility. That's a real possibility. If there stays the separation in the leaderboard, like you mentioned, there's a lot of really good names, a lot of guys with a lot at stake in terms of getting that first major. And you made a great point about the PGA feeling like the fourth major for a long time with some, one and done
kind of.
I mean, yeah, you don't, it doesn't have the pageantry, the tradition of it has a tradition by all means, all the way back to when all the great players won it as a match play event. And anybody that's got a career Grand Slam had to win a PGA championship no matter what era. So it's got a stake, but boy, it's not the one you got hyped for. I mean, British Open, you wake up early, you're watching golf at breakfast time. That feels special. Masters, for a trillion reasons, feels special. The U.S. Open, because it's tough, it's the national championship, feels special. The PGA, I think, to your point, has figured it out with venues. The cream is rising to the top. The way they're setting up the golf courses, the way they're choosing the golf courses has improved. So I think that's really catered to some quality leaderboards like we see this. It's a quirky leaderboard that we sit with this morning. But it's a good one. There, as you mentioned, there's good depth, there's good variety. You've got multiple major winners in there. There are some X factors, though. I think Rory McIlroy, after that opening round, needs to find his way back in that top two or three, and not necessarily in the last group, but I don't think outside of the penultimate group, if he's going to make a charge. Now, Rory makes a charge every Sunday at every major, but I feel like he's got to make some noise. I think it's a guy that's got to put pressure on people. Is Bubba Watson capable? Is Justin Thomas capable? Sure. But it feels like in this position, all the time that's passed, everything's settled. Rory's married now. He's got a daughter now. There's really no more excuses. He's got all the talent. He plays himself into these positions. He plays himself onto Ryder Cup teams. Everything but pile up a bunch of majors, which we thought he would have had done by now, so that's kind of where we are. I kind of feel like that at every major with Rory McIlroy. He's got to mount his charge if he's going to have a legacy we thought he was going to have when he was making it look easy 7 years ago.
Yeah, I'm and I think you start pouring over some of the stats that guys tweet out and some of the thing, I think this all starts with, I think we can all start with Will Zalatoris.
Sure.
Will has putted terribly. I want to make sure I get this right, because I thought it was pretty amazing. Putting inside 10 feet this year, Will Zalatoris on the season is 193rd on the PGA Tour. This week he's first. And, everybody gives him such a hard time about his putting stroke inside right. 5 feet. I mean, you go back to the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines, where he had a couple chances to win that tournament, and he had a putt that just, it looked like his putter did a figure eight on the way back. Like, it was the craziest, like, it was all over the place when he took it back. And, but that's when guys are comfortable putting a certain way, they're comfortable. The other stat that I love, and we'll get into a lot of these, I'm sure, but, you know, Tiger's made the first two cuts at the majors, which is insane, for where he's been. For the fact that these are the only two tournaments he's played in the last year, it's nuts. But then you look at the list of guys who didn't make the cut at both majors,
right?
And it includes eight of the top 18 players in the world. It's Xander Schauffele and Brooks Koepka and Jordan Spieth and Scottie Scheffler and Patrick Cantlay and Dustin Johnson and Sam Burns and Sergio Garcia and Louis Oosthuizen and Daniel Berger. And I mean, it's a nuts list. Like, and I know Tiger has no chance of winning this tournament. That's right. We're not all. I mean, he's what, 13 shots back, whatever the number is. Mm-hmm. But to see him do this is one of the more remarkable stories of this tournament, and it's not just because it's Tiger Woods. I mean, obviously that's, you know, I if you had told me Tiger Woods would make two cuts in majors, I don't think anybody would say anything. But when you go through his story and what he's been through, and in the last year to make the recovery he's made from almost losing his leg, from being in a wheelchair a year ago, to showing up at the Masters and, you know, telling us later basically that walk was almost impossible.
Right.
He called it climbing Mount Everest this week, because it's the hardest mountain you're going to climb. And then he shows up here, and after his first round, I there were legit concerns he was going to withdraw. He couldn't even right. move on his leg the last three or four holes. And when he shows up yesterday, he might shoot 69. I mean, you're just going, like, he's just always going to do things that surpass expectations because he's Tiger Woods. And in a lot of reasons, that's the reason he's the greatest golfer to ever play the game. And I know majors, I know Jack has more majors, but you're going to have a hard time convincing anyone that Tiger's not the best golfer to ever play this game.
Oh, I mean, like you said, yesterday is another great example. When it looks like there's nothing left in the tank, like the body just wouldn't, Tiger proves once and again that his grind is rougher and tougher than almost anybody's grind that's ever played this game. I mean, so many pros have told us through the years that Tiger has rounds that look like 76, and you look up at the scoreboard, he's 68, 69, just like yesterday, where it looks – insurmountable for so many reasons. But yeah, it's just, again, like we talked about at the Masters, we're just getting bonus time with Tiger Woods to watch him do amazing things, like you say, not win this golf tournament, not scare the leader or get into contention, but from where he's come to where he is to be here, not just ceremonially or, you know, taking up a spot, this, you know, he's really, you know, he's made the cut. You just ran through the list of all the guys that didn't make the cut. Right. Guys with a lot at stake in the places in where they are in their careers. You know, you mentioned Xander Schauffele. He needs his first career major to validate everything he's done up to this point in his career. Dustin Johnson still has a legacy he'd like to build onto. Down the list, I mean, Patrick Cantlay needs to be, you know, it's the middle of freaking May. How is Patrick Cantlay missing cuts at majors, Bob? I mean,
what in the world?
How does that? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Somebody's got
to explain that one to me, because that is Patrick Cantlay. The last 2 days is one of the strangest. Like, and I know it happens. I know we saw DJ.
Sure.
I know we saw DJ not play well this week, but DJ, to me, DJ hasn't played, you know, terrific golf in a while. Like, if DJ shows up at a major and misses a cut, I'm not really all that stunned.
And the bigger storyline was
maybe that's on me, but I mean, I that just doesn't surprise me a whole lot. But you tell me Patrick Cantlay, who's what, fifth in the world right now, shows up at the PGA Championship and doesn't even like remotely look like he's anywhere in contention, not just in contention, but anywhere close to making a cut. I thought that was super bizarre. So I don't know. I'm, and when you brought that up, I was like, we got to bring up Cantwell because that is, it's just, where was he? Like, he didn't even show up. And it's weird because, and I go back to this a lot. We always go through that list of guys who missed the cut in golf. And I get it. Like, there are always going to be guys that miss the cut.
Well, that's the thing. You go out to 20, you think, well, this feels like an 81. And all of a sudden you look up, it's 89, 90. And you're like, what the heck?
What just happened?
Truck hit me. Why can't I release my swing or whatever it is? I mean, and you know, not to compare our games to theirs, but everybody's going to go through some kind of a slump. And again, you can't tell in these kind of situations where if it just means so much to them, they're chomping at the bit, they have good practice rounds, and you just let a few shots get away from you. And that's what this golf course has. We talked about the escapability, the ability to have some wide corridors and some places to shape shots, but around the greens and into the rough, you can't really bomb and gouge at this golf course like you can. You can get lucky in some spots and slash through some trees and things like that, but from some openings, but you see the line. I mean, we talk about a big divide, the guys that played early, late, and we thought it would be the opposite because usually it's more favorable for a lot of people. I mean, you have Tiger and Phil, and you see the A crowd tend to get a lot of late, early, but it turned out early, late was the thing to have this time. Will Zalatoris went on a birdie binge in the middle part of his round. A lot of guys were able to right the ship and really separate themselves from the middle part of this field. And some guys who got the other draw just never got it going, you know, got stuck in that rut. And you can see how the course really – again, I'll attribute it to a great setup, a great design, but the course can go both ways. I mean, how many shots are separating minus nine this morning from, you know, you look at Daniel Berger again, another guy. If you talk about a guy who should have one major bite right now, and it would probably be a PGA, freaking Daniel Berger, you know?
You want to go mind blown.
I'm doing the mind blown. The universal sign for mind blown gesture. That's 13 over par. I mean, that's 24 shots clear of the.
If I'm not mistaken on Berger, I think he made a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 yesterday in his round, which is pretty hard to do. So listen, we got a quick break. We got a bunch more of these guys to get into because it's just so interesting. And do want to talk a little bit about Texas men's and women's golf and a quick note on Under Blue Skies and everything that happened with the event. So thank you guys for being with us this morning. We look forward to talking more about the PGA Championship when we come back. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. PGA Tour Superstore is the place to be right now. And I got to tell you, the guys that played in Under Blue Skies for PGA Tour Superstore last week, Jeff and his, it was like his family, basically. And they were awesome. They played great golf. It was fun to see. One more reason to get over and talk to them about your game, getting your game in shape. They know what they're talking about. I watched them hit some shots, and I watched, I know what Jeff can do. I've seen his game a little bit. So make your way over to PGA Tour Superstore, tell them Bob and Carl sent you, and they'll hook you up. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. More to come right after this. Another good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas. Welcome inside another edition of Playing Through on the Horn. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Blue. We're obviously talking a ton about the PGA Championship. I think it's I've waited long enough, Carl. I think I went through all of Justin Ray's tweets, and we still need to get him on the show just to let him know, if he's not listening, that we use his stuff all the time so he understands. Right. All of those things, but I was just kind of thinking right now, it's my favorite stat that he threw out. I just think this one's amazing. So majors won by a player with a 36 hole lead or co-lead since the PGA Tour went to stroke play in 1958. That's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So this is the number of majors won by a player with a 36-hole lead at every course, Masters, U.S. Open, Open Championship, PGA Championship. 37.3%, right? So okay. You got the 36-hole lead. You got a 37% chance of winning. Unless you're at Southern Hills, where you have a 100% chance of winning. 7 for 7. If you have the 36-hole lead after 36 holes at Southern Hills in the PGA Championship, you're going to win. So congratulations to Will Zalatoris on winning the PGA Championship this year.
Go ahead and
engrave
the Wanamaker. Yeah, it's a great set. Well, you hate to be the guy that doesn't, you know, continue that trend, right? That's a little extra pressure for young Will.
I mean, yeah, it's there's obviously some great stuff, and the stats don't mean anything. Will could come out tomorrow and shoot 80 and be totally out of contention. You never know, but it's just an interesting little point that that you make. There are a lot of these that you can go through, and I always enjoy Justin Ray and what he brings to the stat game, to the golf game, to golf in general. He's amazing at what he does. But I'm just Carl, this is when you start looking at what happens this weekend, I think everybody would look at that leaderboard and say, I have a hard time believing tomorrow it's not going to be Rory and Justin Thomas coming down the stretch, both with a chance to win. Rory's been seeking another major for quite some time now. It obviously never happened at the PGA Championship, but you know, he last won a PG. I mean, it never happened in the Masters, obviously, is what I was trying to say. But you know, Rory won the PGA Championship in 2014. He won the U.S. Open in 2011, and he won the Open Championship in 2014. So I mean, we're at a point now. It's been 8 years since he's won a major.
8 years, yeah.
8 years, and we've all picked him. We've all thought it was his time. Again, it goes back to. It goes back to showing you how difficult it is, how the difficulty that it really takes to win a major. Because you're a player as good as Rory McIlroy. And I know he's been on this stretch where he plays terrible in the first round and then comes back and finishes. He always backdoors his way into the top 10, backdoors his way to the second place of the Masters this year. But I think his game's in a good place. I think his head's in a good place. And I think there's a good chance that we see Rory make a run at this thing. And that's not like a bold prediction. I'm just saying it's been a while. I think, you know, if I start to look at this leaderboard, I just think Rory is really going to – he'll be there tomorrow afternoon when we're coming down the stretch.
I think so, you know, and it's Rory's consistency. It's the quality of his game. I don't know if we talked about this briefly, but I don't know if you watched the Greg Norman 30 for 30 that was on about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
I have not. His career.
You forget how dominant he was. There was a time, Bob, when, and I always remember when we worked on Dave Pelz's putting Bible, Dave, this was way before strokes game. He was doing it all with spreadsheets and in different types of data gathering, but it was very primitive back then. But he ranked Greg Norman the best driver of the golf ball and one of the best putters. And I'm like, well, that's pretty freaking good combo. And then you think he was also one of the great iron players. And that's what Rory does for us. We expect him to win because he doesn't do anything mediocre. When he's on, he does everything well. There's no significant weakness in Rory's game, and like you say, his clumsy, his sloppy rounds always come with a bounce back round. It seems like it's just a matter of him putting it all together at the same time. While that's true of everybody, his standard is so much higher. His sharp, I mean, his game from 175 in is as good as anybody's. You know, and he's been arguably called the best driver of the golf ball. I mean, we don't look at him as an all time clutch putter. So we haven't seen him because it's like you said, it's been almost 8-9 years since he's closed at a major. So I think that's really the deciding factor is when is it going to all come together? Because our expectations have never really wavered because this guy hasn't had a significant slump. that you know, that's like we've seen so many others have. It's almost expected by every tour player. The standard is just so much higher for this guy.
Yeah. And I look, you can go through a lot of players in that kind of same idea.
I think so. I mean, yeah. I mean, we talked about Patrick Cantlay. We talked about Dustin Johnson when he's on. We talked about John Rahm. It's another name we haven't mentioned. You know, I think a lot of people had expectations that John Rahm would be right at the top of this leaderboard right now. So
for sure.
We've got the leaderboard we've got, and like you mentioned, I think there's sky high expectations for Rory McIlroy. Justin Thomas, I think Mito Pereira would be a great story, as would Bubba Watson at this phase in his career. You got to realize Bubba might have a personality that's divisive, and you might want to go one way or the other in terms of Bubba as a guy or Bubba as a standard bearer for the game, which I might be in the minority. I think it's actually great for the game. When you see Bubba put on his green jacket and go to drive, chip, and putt in the Augusta National Women's Amateur every year, I think that's really cool. I think there's a lot of things he does in social media and off the grid that Bubba's a pretty good guy. So I know he can rub people the wrong way. I know he's not one of the best liked guys in the locker room, but he plays a style of golf that's kind of captivating. I mean, you just don't see that every day. Every once in a while, you might get paired with a stranger on a trip or at the public course, and they're like, how is this guy scoring the ball? He hits it everywhere. It's, you know, you look right, the ball's going left, you know, but this guy just finds a way to get the thing in the hole. And that's Bubba Watson at the most extreme level. So, you know, and we've talked about the top heaviness of this leaderboard a little bit, but there's still some guys that can make a move. And we talk about this every time you and I talk about majors. Where is that line? What's the all time, you know, what's the far depth of the ocean in terms of, you know, Palmer at Cherry Hills mounting a crazy comeback? Does anybody in this top 20 have a crazy comeback in them? And it's almost dismissive to stop at 20, but I mean, how far is too far? Because I mean, let's be honest, even par is T23, but you got names like Seamus Power, Cameron Tringali, Adrian Arnault, Victor Hovland, Bo Hosler, Tom Hoagie, who was up there at the top of the leaderboard for a bit, Ryan Fox. That doesn't strike fear. That there's no lightning rod that says these guys are the ones that can dash up this leaderboard. I don't know. I mean, even as Xander Schauffele, who has great ability, is ten shots back right now. That sounds like a lot the way this leaderboard's shaping up.
It does. It does. It absolutely does.
It sounds like more than 10 shots. I mean, it just. For whatever reason, it does. And again, today might contract. I think if you like an exciting final round, you're going to hope for chaos and contraction today. But I don't know if we're going to get it. I mean, I think names at minus two are interesting. Gary Woodland, Sam Burns, Cameron Young, Cameron Smith. Those are guys that can move. But will they? I mean, that's just where we are. I mean, and Matt Kuchar's in that mix. It's they can, but will they?
How far back is too far back, right? I mean, you know, I'm not saying not, you know, you never know what's going to happen, but it's, you know, to see these guys all week hit shots short and let it run up, and you know, the more you play a course like this, the more you're going to figure it out. Now, again, I'll be interested to see how the drastic weather changes affect today and tomorrow, but yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think this is a great leaderboard for a lot of these guys for where they stand. And even a guy like Tyrrell Hatton, who's played such good golf for such a long time. Joaquin Niemann was right there. He was 4 under at one point yesterday. He's a guy that can definitely put himself in the mix.
Right.
But again, he's 8 shots back, and you go, is that going to be too much to overcome? I don't know. I'll be interested if Will Zalatoris goes, he's gone 66, 65. If he goes 70, 68, is that going to be enough? Is 11 under going to be enough to win this? I don't think at this point we have any idea. Well, I that's why I keep saying that about the weather, because I'm really interested to see what that does to change things. What's the, you know, what's the, how hard's the wind going to be blowing? What are we looking at to see all these things? So why, you know, we'll see. We've still got two really fun days of golf with a really good leaderboard. What was your take on Jordan Spieth? You know, it's a really rough start, shoots 72 on day one and, you know, two over, kind of, it doesn't take you out of it, but then he fired a one under yesterday. He's tied for 30th and one over. He's 10 back again. Is he out of it? Is Shane Lowry out of it at two over? Brooks Koepka at two over? Xander Schauffele, Tony Finau, all these, Ricky Fowler, Tommy Fleetwood are all one over. You know, are guys 10 shots out of, 10 shots back out of it? No, but they're going to have to shoot 60, fire up above a 63. 64 to get themselves in contention.
Yeah, and I just don't know who that is. I mean, you mentioned some great names there. And Jordan Spieth is a guy that's capable. I mean, he was, and again, the heat check didn't really prove anything. You talk about we'll talk about Patrick Cantlay, Scottie Scheffler, Jordan Spieth. I mean, those are guys you could have penciled in for a top 10 at this point in the tournament that we're talking about this morning. It just wasn't the case. So coming in hot to this event didn't really mean anything. I think it's the nature and the unusual kind of throwback nature of the golf course. It's kind of an older style. I mean, the firm and fast really plays well for the guys that can hit it far. And just everything else about the golf course lends it to guys who can shape shots and be creative and have really solid short games. And short of that, hit the ball really accurately with the irons. And of course, that's why you're seeing a Dustin Thomas up there. But by the same token, it's also why the Bubba Watsons are there. And it's just interesting that this leaderboard has Chris Kirk, Stuart Sink, and Matt Kuchar. I mean, that's a throwback. I mean, throwback to the when this golf course was built nearly a century ago. But those guys are throwback to a not so far away time when they were contending in events like this, you know, a decade or more ago. I think guys with a chance, I mean, you look no further than Cameron Smith at minus two. I mean, if Cameron Smith, you know, shoots 64, 63, he's a dangerous man. I mean, he's a dangerous man if he shoots 65, 66. We don't know what Will Zalatoris is going to do, but assume if he hovers around par, you know, one under, two under, or maybe goes backward a little bit, this golf tournament gets really interesting. But it's, right, you know, something's going to have to happen pretty early this afternoon.
You're right. I think that's the biggest thing, is somebody's going to have to make a real run early in their round. I don't know that you can play the front and one over and then try to go seven under on the back, or, you know, I just think that's going to be a lot to ask on this course, the harder it's going to get as the weekend goes on. So
agreed.
It's going to be fun. We've got a lot of names that I think everybody knows. And then in these type of events, especially come Sunday, it's going to be fun to get the introduction for a lot of people that don't know some of these names, like Amito Pereira, and the opportunity to get to know who he is and what he brings to the table. All right, when we come back, may touch a little more on PGA Championship, but the Texas men's and women's golf team are heading to the national championship, and we're gonna go real quick back to Under Blue Skies and get you an updated number and kind of one last feel of what we did there. So we appreciate it. We appreciate you guys being with us this morning. We'll be back in a minute. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. All right, final segment on a major championship Saturday. It's the PGA Championship continuing today. You can watch it on CBS Austin. Love throwing a little plug in there. And, of course, we'll have more tomorrow night on CBS Austin Sports Sunday.
It's nice and convenient right there. It's CBS Austin.
Yeah.
You've been in the family. Yeah.
It's just every now and then you got to bring that up. So, Carl, we've talked all show about the PGA Championship, but let's get into the Texas men's and women's golf teams, because both qualified for the national championships at Greyhawk and Scottsdale. The men this week, not that there was ever I wouldn't say there was ever really concern they were going to get in. I think for the most part, I think if you followed this at all, you kind of know kind of the way this goes. But let's start with the women because they started yesterday. They'll continue as we move forward. But the women shot 17 over yesterday. Not a great start. The women are in 19th place. Got to be in that top eight to move on and be a part of the match play, which of course they were last year before bowing out the eventual national champion Ole Miss. But just a really rough day to get going. Bridget Tebow starts off for the Horns and shoots 75, and that was their best score. They just did not get a lot. Bo-Yun Park shoots 76, Sophie Guo 77, Sarah Kuskova 77, and Bentley Cotton 79. So it was just not a good way to start. But as the saying goes, Carl, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And the ladies will have a couple more rounds to kind of get it together. And, you know, most importantly, if you look at that top eight right now, currently sitting in eighth place, Alabama and Southern Cal, they're at 10 over. So Texas is only 7 shots out right now. And that's in these events, you can easily overcome that. They just need to play a little bit better golf. And have the girls play a little better. So
a little momentum goes a long way in the team event. Yeah. If they can all just improve a little bit, that 9-shot deficit can be made up. There's no question about that. So I think right now that's what you have to think. It's just tighten it up, sharpen a few things, make a few more putts and settle the nerves a little bit and focus on that top eight. Just get into contention at this point.
And I've got a feeling they will. I've got a feeling they'll kind of play a little better today and then again tomorrow. But Carl, when we shift over to the men, what I was going to say is that, you know, they started the national championships on Friday. I was never really concerned they weren't going to get there.
Right.
I just think it's so, and this is going to be the one thing we're going to look, if this team doesn't do something special next week, I think this is going to be the one thing we'll always look back on this team is why they couldn't put it all together at the right time. They've had some unbelievable play. We've talked about this on the show over and over again. They've had some unbelievable play across the board. And it's so much fun to watch these guys play. You know, Travis Vick just kind of put them on his shoulders and guided them through the regional rounds. But they have the talent to win a national championship. There's absolutely no doubt about that. The question is, when they get to this point, how do they put it all together? And I think it's going to be – I'm just super intrigued to start watching next Friday with this men's team because, like I said, I don't know that you can show me a more talented team in the country. It's just a question of can they be consistent enough and be together enough to go do this starting on Friday at Greyhound.
It's a golden age of college golf. I mean, you don't have to look any further than the Big 12, but then you get out the Pac-12 and SEC and all over the country. It's just really a golden age because there are a couple of teams you could say this about, but John Fields has kept this team together, gotten it stronger, gotten more highly recruited guys. So yeah, this is nothing short of a dream team with the Cootie twins and Cole Hammer and Travis Fick and you name it, it's a deep, solid team that you just dream of as a coach and as a fan base of having. And again, it's a cliche, but if these guys play like they're capable of at one time, at the same time, really special things can happen. I mean, that's just the reality.
There's just no doubt. I mean, absolutely no doubt. And that's what I think. To me, that'll be the fun part. I think that will be the really fun part to kind of see what happens with these guys. There's no one backing anyone any bigger than I will with this team. I just think they have the opportunity to do something big, and I think we all just want to see if they can do it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Before we go, real quick, just want to say another thank you for our event, the 8th Annual Under Blue Skies Golf Classic and Party. I'm just thrilled with where we continue to grow this event for all the people that do so much good. But I just wanted to let everybody know we are, I believe we're close to done counting everything. I don't know that we're going to get much more in at this point, but we raised $267,000 this year for the ALS Association of Texas. And to know that what that impacts, how that impacts our patients, to know how that impacts everyone, It's overwhelming, and I've kind of run out of words. I know we talked a lot about this last week, so I don't want to get too deep into it, but I just wanted to say thank you again. To raise $267,000 is an unbelievable feat for all the people involved, you included, Carl, and we have an amazing committee that does so much great work, and Jesse Kellogg came on board this year with us and did amazing things to make this happen, and I'm so happy. We've now raised $925,000 over the course of 8 years. Hopefully we get to do this again next year, and I think we'll have the opportunity to cross the $1 million mark, which is amazing. So I'm just thankful. I just want to say thank you before we go to everyone involved. Carl, thank you to you for all you did to make this happen, and we're just going to continue to grow this thing and make it bigger and better every year.
Congratulations, Bob. That is just incredible. Let the people know what the previous record was. I mean, you raised $267,000 this year.
Last year we raised $170,000, and that was the most we had ever raised. And this was the first time that we've done something like this. So amazing.
Cracked 200 and flew right past it and really, really opened up the doors for bigger and better things. And obviously next year is going to be extremely special. Just the milestone, you know, just to see how far you are up the mountain. Once you hit that $1 million mark, it's significant. All the lives touched, all the families impacted by this work, by the generosity of this community and the hard work you and this committee put into it. That's just great. You know, I know it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of people, you know, pulling long hours and doing a lot of things that require some unusual skill sets to pull off, but it's all so worthwhile. It's just great to see. Great to see the community come together and do good things.
Like I said, a lot of great people involved, and we're just fortunate to have everybody on board. And again, we'll continue to grow this thing and make it bigger and better for our ALS patients and our continuing fight to find a cure for ALS. So thank you to everyone involved. All right, Carl, always enjoy it. Let's have a fun weekend with this PGA Championship. We'll recap it next week and get into the National Championship with the Texas men, among other things.
Well, I'm excited to watch both Longhorn teams, and I hope it's an intriguing PGA Championship. I hope it's not a boat race. I hope there's some really fun golf, because I think the golf course is set up beautifully. I think it's a fun, quirky field. I hope it's entertaining. I hope we can grab that popcorn Sunday and watch a good one. Have a great week, Bob.
Hey, you do the same, Carl, as always. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everybody.